It's March 21st. I'm Brian Dean Wright, former CIA operations officer, and this is The Wright Report. Hey, good day to you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Wright Report, your daily news podcast. I've got three briefs for you this morning that are shaping America and the world. First up, the Biden administration is backing off of its most stringent of rules for electric vehicles. We'll talk about that big announcement made yesterday. Second, an odd warning from the White House about hackers who were apparently assaulting our water systems. I'll explain why the announcement yesterday was so peculiar. Third, we've got a global roundup of news to talk about this morning, starting with an update on whether China will be ready for war by the year 2027 as they planned. Also, farmer protests out in Poland are heating back up. Finally, an update out of the African country of Niger. We will talk about the connection to a nuclear bomb. Later, a set of listener questions today about one topic, and that is the state of our union. We'll talk about the threats, the economy, and why our young people in this country tend to be so very unhappy. But first, let's get to our top stories of the morning. We begin with the Biden administration's decision yesterday to throw their plans for electric vehicles into full reverse. The Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, announced a big change from their previously proposed rules. Car companies will now only need to make about 35% of their fleets fully electric over the next 5 years, and that is way down from about 70% as previously proposed. As Reuters News Service and others reported yesterday, Joe Biden and his team backpedaled on their previous plan after a sustained push by car makers, car dealerships, and union workers. Their collective argument for these new rules, well, boiled down to two things. First, car companies and dealerships said that consumers just don't want these electric vehicles, at least not at the scale that Mr. Biden and his EPA were demanding. Instead, gas-powered cars and trucks remain the overwhelming favorite of U.S. consumers, capturing about 85 to 90% of new vehicle sales. I should emphasize, and to be fair, sales of EVs are increasing slowly, just not as fast as gas-powered or hybrid cars. Plus, data show that sales of EVs are largely occurring out in California or in cities with very liberal voters, and those markets are increasingly tapped out. The second reason that Mr. Biden and his team are dialing back their EV strategy is because of some good old-fashioned politics. As Reuters and others confirmed it for us yesterday, auto worker unions are reluctant to embrace EV manufacturing plants because those cars require fewer workers to assemble them. So they prefer more traditional factories with gas and diesel-powered cars and trucks, which naturally need more workers. And that is why the folks at Reuters said yesterday that Mr. Biden decided to be flexible in his EV push, as of course he is up for re-election and he needs those union workers to be very happy, especially in key swing states like Michigan. But as you would probably guess, not everybody is happy with this news, including another part of Mr. Biden's electoral base, and that would be the environmentalists. For example, the Center for Biological Diversity blasted Mr. Biden and his White House team yesterday, saying that they, quote, caved to pressure from a big auto, big oil, and car dealerships, and riddled the new plan with loopholes that are big enough to drive a Ford F-150 through, end quote. Well, also upset was a Tesla Motor Company. They said that the new rules allow for a greater use of plug-in hybrids, which apparently rarely get plugged in. Quote, unfortunately, people use plug-in hybrids mainly as gas cars, which means that their CO2 emissions are far worse than the EPA suggests, end quote. Well, that aside, consumers really like them, at least the truly pure hybrids. Those are actually seeing increased sales, with Ford, General Motors, Toyota, and Honda adding shifts at those hybrid plants to increase production of those very much high-in-demand vehicles. So those are the facts and data about this big change or switch that the Biden folks announced yesterday. But rather than pivot to my analysis and opinion, I'm instead going to give you the views of someone else. And that is Mr. Donald Trump. He announced yesterday that should he be elected, he is going to roll back these new EV rules on day one. So there you go. We shall see. And with that, we turn to our second report of the morning. The Biden administration is warning U.S. governors throughout the nation that there is an aggressive cyber attack underway, led by Chinese and Iranian hackers. They are targeting America's water systems. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan joined his Biden colleagues yesterday, telling governors that, quote, disabling cyber attacks are striking our water and wastewater systems throughout the United States. These attacks have the potential to disrupt the critical lifeline of clean and safe drinking water, as well as impose significant costs on affected communities, end quote. Mr. Sullivan added that the EPA is the lead agency to work to address these concerns, not the FBI, which is interesting. The letter comes, by the way, 5 months after we knew about and learned about an Iranian hacker group who attacked a utility out in Pennsylvania. No lasting damage done there, thank God. Also, there has been a lot of reporting about the Chinese doing this, some cyber attackers and hackers called the Volt Typhoon. I briefed you on this group last summer and then again in January. They are Beijing's cyber hackers who are embedding their cyber tools to bring down our utility systems in the case they ever invade Taiwan. One final thing to emphasize from this letter, the governors of this country were reminded that America's water systems are especially vulnerable. So it is up to them, the governors, to fix these issues and do so as soon as possible. So those are the quick facts and data on what I view to be a very odd letter that went out from the White House this week to the nation's governors. Let me explain why I view that, pivoting now to my analysis and opinion. So here's the thing that is very peculiar to me. The facts contained in this letter were known all the way last summer, and they were then again publicized in the press this winter as well. In other words, this latest letter to the governors offers them and us nothing new. So why put it out? And why publicize that you're putting it out? It's very odd. So in my experience, both at the CIA and my short time on Capitol Hill, what's going on or what this suggests is one of two things. First, there is a grave and specific threat, and they have some high confidence that this threat is here or it is coming soon. So they are trying to warn folks, but without panicking anyone. Second, politicians generally do this to get in front of a threat politically. In other words, a politician like Mr. Biden can now say with this letter, hey, look, I've been warning about this for a long time. In fact, I just did back on March 19th or March 20th. We told the governors to get on top of it. Now, maybe some did and some didn't, but I did my part. In other words, to me, this letter feels like a cover your backside. And that is why, that politics aside, I would certainly encourage folks to get your emergency kits together ASAP, because something about this letter just isn't right. I'm asking some friends about what they might know, and I'll, as ever, keep you posted. Before we head to our first commercial break, one quick clarification from yesterday. I spoke about the judicial whiplash regarding Texas Bill, or Senate Bill, rather, 4. I mentioned to you that the U.S. Supreme Court allowed the bill to take effect, and that is true. And then just hours later, in the dead of night, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals issued an emergency block or hold on that law, and that is also true. I then said that the court was a Texas-based court, and that is not true. It is, in fact, based in the fine state of Louisiana, specifically in the city of New Orleans. Although, in my defense, isn't East Texas pretty much Louisiana, right? No? Okay. Just kidding. But look, now that we are in New Orleans, Texas, how about we do a quick update on this SB 4? Because three members of the Fifth Circuit Court held a Zoom chat yesterday to talk about this case. There were three judges that were involved in the conversation. One didn't seem too impressed about the arguments that were put forward by the state of Texas that were arguing that they should be allowed to start arresting and deporting illegal migrants or aliens. There was another judge who, on the other hand, was much more supportive. Then there was a third. And this individual did not say a word. And this judge is someone appointed by Mr. Joe Biden. Very interesting. Nevertheless, the SB 4 debate continues to be a very important one and a big one for us all. And that is why I will continue to watch it as it develops. With that, Now, let us take our first break of the morning. For subscribers listening at rightreport.substack.com, thank you. Meanwhile, for my other loyal listeners, I offer you an equal thanks. We'll be right back. I got an email from Mark and Kathy in Central Ohio about JaceMedical.com. Brian, they wrote, "We heard about Jace from your podcast and we ordered some antibiotics and our cholesterol medicines. We just wanted to make sure that we have peace of mind in case things go south, and we're now set. So much appreciated." Well, Mark and Kathy, you are welcome. And this is why I love being so choosy about my ad partners. I can find companies like Jace Medical. They provide life-saving prescription medications delivered right to your door. And by now, you all know how easy it is. You just go to JaseMedical.com, you fill out a simple online form, and in no time flat, you will get your medicines. And in some cases, you'll have a quick phone call with one of their board-certified physicians to make sure you're getting exactly what you need. But either way, it's a great service. So go to JaseMedical.com, that's J-A-S-E Medical.com, and when you enter promo code RIGHT at checkout, you are going to get a great discount on your order. Again, folks, that is promo code RIGHT, W-R-I-G-H-T, at J-A-S-E Medical.com, that's JaseMedical.com, and do this today, because there is no telling what tomorrow might bring. Somewhere this morning in capitals in America and Europe, leaders are planning how to best seize Russian financial assets. We spoke of this in early January and all the related threats to the U.S. dollar. But it could also have terrible impacts on our pocketbooks, too. So if you're looking for ways to diversify your investments, and boy, we should, consider physical gold and silver. And consider American Hartford Gold. They are the precious metal dealer that I use and trust. When you give them a call, they will explain how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by purchasing physical gold and silver. And feel very comfortable using American Hartford Gold, as they have an A-plus ranking from the Better Business Bureau. So either give them a call at 866-353-2694. Again, that's 866-353-2694. Or just text them. Text RIGHT, W-R-I-G-H-T, to 65532. And gosh, that's easy. Again, text W-R-I-G-H-T to 65532. And when you do, they are going to give you up to $5,000 worth of free silver on your first order, depending on your total purchase. So give them a call at 866-353-2694 or text my last name, W-R-I-G-H-T, to 65532. And folks, buy that physical gold and silver with American Hartford Gold. Welcome back to the Right Report. Let's continue with our briefs this morning with a pivot towards international news. First up, China is on track to be ready for the invasion of Taiwan by their stated goal of the year 2027. That was the assessment provided yesterday by the Admiral of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command. He testified at the House Armed Services Committee, saying that Beijing is building its military and nuclear arsenal at a pace and on a scale not seen since World War II. For example, in just the past 3 years, they have added more than 400 fighter aircraft, 20 warships, and doubled their inventory of ballistic and cruise missiles. They've also expanded their nuclear weapons at a pace that is much faster than U.S. intel agencies ever expected. They are, in fact, on pace to have 1,500 warheads in the next 10 years. For comparison purposes, by the way. Lastly, China and the U.S. continue to race for newer weapons and delivery systems, including something called hypersonics. Those can evade missile defense systems. In fact, the U.S. just tested a hypersonic missile over the weekend near Guam. But unfortunately, that test aside, China has a very firm lead in these very fast and agile missile systems. One other thing to note from the Admiral's testimony yesterday, China continues to make very provocative moves in the South China Sea, especially against allies like the Philippines. He said that one small incident could, quote, lead to a bad place, end quote. And that's because the Philippines and the U.S. have a mutual defense treaty that obligates the U.S. to come to the Philippines' aid in case their ships are ever attacked, which would certainly include in that contested South China Sea. With those quick facts and data, I want to offer you just one brief analysis and opinion. I think that we should combine this assessment by the Admiral with the report we talked about this morning about cyber attacks on our water systems. Because putting this together, we're starting to see some signals that something is afoot. Again, I've pinged my sources for what they might know, and I'll keep you posted. With that, we now pivot to our second report of international news. Farmers in Europe continue their protests this morning with the largest and most vocal in the country of Poland. Over 70,000 people locked arms yesterday in over 500 locations throughout that country, blocking roads mostly in and out of neighboring Ukraine. Their anger continues to be centered on two issues. First, Ukrainian agricultural products like corn, wheat, and sunflowers are not subject to the same rules and regulations as those guys in Poland and throughout the European Union. And that means that those crops in places like Poland are ultimately more expensive, at least relatively speaking, which then encourages buyers to choose the cheap Ukrainian goods instead. Now, normally, those Ukrainian imports would face some pretty steep tariffs, but the EU has relaxed those rules in solidarity with Kiev in their war with Russia. And that is why so many of Europe's farmers are so darn upset. They are losing market share to Ukraine, plus their revenue. And many are watching their crops either sit or rot, waiting for buyers somewhere to buy the stuff who ultimately never come. Second, farmers in Poland and beyond are angry because many of Europe's rules and regulations for their ag industry are due to climate change initiatives. In fact, the European goal is to achieve carbon neutrality by the year 2050. And farmers and ranchers have been told that they have to do their part to help. But as the Polish farmers are telling local press this morning, the European Green Deal, as we could call it, which technically is called Fit for 55, equals death, at least to Polish agriculture, if not other countries in Europe as well. And that is why some European officials are starting to offer, well, some relaxation, as it were, of some of the climate rules, but not many, at least not enough to satisfy a lot of Europe's angry farmers. Second, EU officials are also announcing that they're going to try to restrict some of Ukraine's agricultural goods from getting into countries like Poland, but they're still refusing to raise tariffs back to normal. So the protests in Poland and beyond will continue, not only in the capital city of Warsaw, Poland, but elsewhere as well, including Spain and the Czech Republic. I'll keep you posted. Finally, this morning, an update for you from the country of Niger. Over the past few weeks, we have been here a couple of times. You'll remember that this is the very exotic country in the Sahel region of North Central Africa. On Monday, I briefed you on the fact that the Biden administration had offended the government of Niger over the weekend. The military junta then demanded on Monday that the U.S. get out, effective immediately. That would then leave behind the $100 million U.S. drone base in the city of Agadez. But yesterday, the Pentagon claimed that the eviction notice, as it were, might have a little bit of wiggle room. The U.S. chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Mr. C.Q. Brown, said that they've gotten some mixed signals about how quickly they have to leave Agadez, although he did not elaborate. But either way, the Pentagon continues to make plans to draw down the remaining 200 or so folks who remain at that drone base in Agadez. One other really interesting wrinkle to this story. You may recall that Russia has been aggressively moving into places like Niger and elsewhere in the Sahel as they kick us out and the French. Well, there is apparently somebody else who is helping to push us aside, and that is the country of Iran. The Wall Street Journal reported late Monday that Niger is in advanced talks with Tehran to provide them with uranium. Allegedly, it is a fuel for their civilian nuclear program, but analysts say it is also likely for their clandestine nuclear weapons program that, of course, Iran is alleged to operate. The military junta in Niger, for the record, says that that is a lie. Iranian authorities, best that I could tell, have yet to respond. But if it is true, it would not be the first time that an outside power came knocking on the door of an African nation to build their nuclear bombs. In fact, the U.S. did it back in World War II. We bought uranium from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. That uranium was later used to bomb the country of Japan. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we concluded this morning's episode of The Right Report. But I've got one more thing before I let you go. We'll be right back. Well, good morning. Are you eating your FactorMeals.com breakfast? Well, for Pete's sake, why not? Factor is the best meal delivery company in America, especially for busy or retired people. So here's why I think so. First, it's just the taste. The food is delivered fresh to your door, never frozen, and when you taste it, you will know exactly what I'm talking about. These meals just burst with flavor. And not just for breakfast. They've got lunches, dinners too, plus cold-pressed juices, shakes, and smoothies. And that is the second reason for why I love Factor Meals. They've got variety. Woo! More than 35 different meal options to choose from. So folks, get Factor Meals today at 50% off. Go to factormeals.com/right50, that's W-R-I-G-H-T 50, and get 50% off. Again, that is promo code right50 at factormeals.com/right50 and get your 50% off. And as you do, remember that you are getting a meal service that is good for your body, great for your taste buds, and I promise you are going to love it. Welcome back to The Right Report with one more thing before I let you go. It is three listener questions today about one thing, and that is the State of the Union. We've got our friend Dustin up in Grand Forks, North Dakota. He wrote in about what he said was a shocker of a poll to him, and here it is. Gallup polling showed that fewer Americans find Russia and China to be threats this year than last year. Okay, well, that's interesting, but what shocked Dustin, and frankly shocked me, is this. Only 18% of Democrats find that China is our greatest national threat or enemy. But 48% of Democrats said that, no, Russia is. As for Republicans, it's the opposite. 67% named China as our top threat, while only 10% said Russia. And that disconnect certainly said something to Dustin, and I think it certainly says something to me about the state of our union. So here's why, and let me now officially pivot to my analysis and opinion. Since the year 2016, mainstream press outlets have aggressively pushed this Trump-Russia storyline. And that has turned into what I think is an irrational hysteria. And that's really a shame, because the Russians certainly deserve our very sober attention. Moscow is not our friend. Putin is not a good guy. But I will tell you with high confidence that Mr. Putin and his cronies in Moscow are a far easier threat to manage than President Xi and the Chinese. Again, I can say that with high confidence. So, Dustin, good catch. And what a thing to consider this morning as the White House is warning us that our water systems are especially vulnerable to Chinese hackers. Maybe Mr. Biden should relay that message to his fellow Democrats. Next up, we have Brian, which he said he spells it with an I, and that is the better way to do it. So, okay, thanks for that, Brian, in Cheekyville, Pennsylvania, I think is the city where you're at. Anyway, Brian asked if I saw the facts and data from about a week ago that came to us from a survey regarding consumer confidence. It is published by the University of Michigan. Economists had predicted that the number of us in this country feeling positive about the economy would go up, but it did not. It went down. So Brian, with an I, thought that I should share that with y'all, and I will, and just did, because I agree, it's important. What this, I think, continues to show us is that the sunny message from economists and the White House, it just isn't reflected by a lot of folks out there, your fellow Americans. And I think that's important to think about as we think about this state of our union, most especially for the poor and the working class. Which takes us then to the third and wonderful email that I got about happiness in our state of the union. Josh out in Colorado Springs, Colorado, flagged a poll for me from the Gallup organization that came out yesterday, I think. It looked at global happiness or well-being. The poll found that overall, America is less happy this year than last year, but not all of us. Middle-aged and older folks are pretty happy, actually, but not those under the age of 30. And that is very interesting and very important, because the historical pattern in this country is that Americans are pretty happy until we get to our middle age, which is about 45, according to the polls. At that point, we are pretty bummed out for a while before we eventually snap out of it. But that is starting to change. America's young people are feeling very unhappy very early. And that change has been relatively sudden over just the past 3 or 5 years. So, Josh, I think that this poll is capturing five things. First, I've shared previously with folks that our young women in particular are prescribed with more antidepressants than ever before. Young men don't seem to be quite as affected. Next, we know that data show that young people in general, but most especially our young women, are reporting that they feel lonely and isolated. So in trying to understand those two things, let's talk about the third thing that we know this morning. And here it is. The economic position of our young people is more precarious than in generations gone by. For example, we know that many young people have been priced out of the housing market. Then their rent is terribly high as well. And they struggle with that, too, because their wages have been eaten up by inflation, from groceries to car payments. In fact, here's something you might not know. A record number of our young people now live with or rely financially on their parents well into their late 20s. So naturally, one might imagine that you might be feeling a little bit lonely or depressed. Nevertheless, let's talk about the fourth thing that we know this morning. We should also think about the health of the families that these young people are coming from. So we know, for instance, that America has more single parents than any other nation on the planet. And that is certainly true of Black and brown folks, especially Black and brown moms. Finally, we are living in an era where the education system is increasingly filled with, shall I say, agendas and ideologies. And I want to be careful on this because it starts to get into culture wars, but which, of course, I tried to avoid. But we do know a couple things that we should talk about. We know that an increasing number of our kids are actually taught to hate America. In fact, only 20% of our young people are very proud to be American. That poll came out last summer. Next, we know that our young people are increasingly being taught that some races or ethnicities are good, but others are bad. I think the most infamous example of that was the Smithsonian's chart, the museum in Washington, D.C., was published by the African American Museum about 3 years ago. And it shared with all of us, but especially our young people, that being white was bad, and that some of the bad traits of being white include hard work, logic, and the nuclear family, of course, which would involve moms and dads. And then finally, we have this. Last week, the Gallup organization, again, the Gallup polling folks, they reported that 30% of America's young women identify as what they call and embrace as queer. And I don't offer that as or by way of judgment. By now, you all know that I embrace and have enjoyed working with a lot of folks out there with different kinds of religions and sexual orientations and political affiliations and the rest. But that percentage, 30%, is astronomically high, certainly as we compare it to other generations, which that percentage tends to be closer to 3, 5, 8%. So I think that those five things that we just discussed help us to start to understand why not all is well with the state of our young people this morning. Now, I should tell you that there is some good news here, too. We've got some recent data showing that marriage rates of younger people are starting to tick back up while divorce rates are starting to head down. And that's great news. And that's actually what I'm hoping that we discuss tomorrow, because I have booked an absolutely brilliant author and economist to talk with us about why having moms and dads, parents who are married, it's a really important thing. She has published a book on this issue. It's called The Two-Parent Privilege. We talked about it this past fall. She makes a very compelling and fact-driven case that our families, well, in order for them to thrive and ultimately for our nation to thrive, we need two parents in the home. So I am so looking forward to that as we discuss the state of our union. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we conclude your morning brief. As always, I will see you tomorrow, God willing. Until then, I leave you with the creed of every good spy and every wise American. And they're the words from the Gospel of John, chapter 8, verse 32. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Good day.